Are we to Hanselman, it's on 9.
This isn't Hanselman, it's on 9. It's This Week on Channel 9. I am Dan Fernandez. We have Brian Keller and Scott Hanselman as our special From Hansel Minutes. One thing to notice, we actually have a logo this week.
We do.
This is new. I have never seen that before.
So props to my friend Lincoln Anderson. I've known Lincoln for a long time, since fifth grade actually. Happens to be a designer over at 352 Media. And since we have no budget, I called him up and said, hey.
Very cool. Elementary school logo. Nepotism.
Absolutely.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good looking logo.
So thank you, Lincoln. So who is Scott Hanselman? Let's talk a little bit about you. Yeah. Who is that?
That is just flat out mean. That is... Did you call my mom to get this picture? That is me with my brother in a headlock, covered in baking soda.
Obviously.
That's just how we roll at the Hanselman house. No, I got the idea that the baking soda would clean the floor or something. I don't know. You know, you're a kid, you're 5, and you just discover something and say, oh, this must be what we use to clean things with. And that found its way onto every horizontal surface in the house.
And now onto the internet.
And onto my brother's head. He's actually a Portland fireman now, and he's about 6'5".
Oh, so is he watching?
Hopefully not, or he will beat me mercilessly amongst the head and
Dan
neck.
Dan found the picture, just so you know.
Did you? Yeah, really? Yeah. Live image search. It turns out you are on the internet. Yeah,
darn that internet.
I know.
So first story.
Yeah. So we had 2 acquisitions this week. It's been a busy week. First one is Danger.
Okay.
And Danger builds the T-Mobile Sidekick, which a lot of people know. They do software. And there's a couple theories around here. Again, we are not spokesmen for the people. We're
unpaid interns.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. And Hanselman's here, or he might be left field.
I don't even think he's in this diagram.
Yeah. I just heard about this just now.
Yeah. So Danger makes some stuff, and here's the quote: Danger continues to provide an effortless and fun mobile experience for consumers. So really, this is a consumer play. In my opinion, and this is Robbie Box org, so it's the mm-hmm. same org that does Windows Mobile and does Zune as well, mm-hmm. and it really is for the utes. It's for the kids reaching out to that. They have a lot of consumer experience. If you think about Windows Mobile has a lot of features for more business enterprises.
Right. The suits.
So there's a theory, and you want to give...
So a lot of people are wondering why we actually acquired this technology or why we acquired this company. And they didn't actually build on Windows Mobile. That was the first thing that I assumed was, this is just another Windows Mobile.
Java, partner. You could actually do J#.
Probably not. Not on this device. But yeah. I used to be the J# product manager, so that's a running joke we've got
it's
there.
It's okay.
But
I don't blame you for it.
But yeah, it is essentially, they build J2ME-based devices. And so the question becomes, why did Microsoft make this acquisition? And the theory floating around is that it's to build the Zune phone.
So, yeah, ooh. And I think this was on either Mary Jo's blog or Joe Wilcox's blog.
ZDNet,
right?
Yeah.
If it was ZDNet, then it was Joe's.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
So interesting theories. Who knows what will shake out because of this acquisition?
So we don't know. Don't quote us on that, but it's just
cool stuff. Yeah.
So what's next?
This is another acquisition we did. This is the Virtual Earth team, Caligari, which nice. I hope is nice. How they pronounce their
I'm
name.
I'm sure they do it, and they move their faces like that at the same
Caligari.
Time.
With the mozzarella.
Yeah, oh my God, with the mozzarella. Oh.
These guys have been around forever. I was using these guys in the 90s when I finally got Windows 3.1 to go to 1024 resolution.
Ooh. Wow.
Love the True Space. These guys are awesome.
When you had like 16-bit color. Yeah.
I was living the life, man.
So you used to be a designer then?
No, I was just a guy with a really awesome computer. So the block, everyone on the block would come around from a...
Nice.
No, but I mean, I've always had interest in 3D modeling, but I've just found it to be just really difficult. And it's all about the tools.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about getting the tool experience correct.
So what these guys do is they build software for presentation, design, animation, and even 3D worlds. And that's the play, and this is the quote from the CEO, which is, they're working with the VE team in the process of building out an immersive 3D web experience. Mm-hmm. So right now we have a 3D web experience, and you can actually add models to it, the Virtual Earth mm-hmm. guys. And now you have tools to build it. Now, what's exciting to me, if we build back, is there's some really, really rich graphics and image capability here, and animation. So I would love it if this stuff ever got integrated, say, in Expression Blend or...
Oh, yeah, File XNA. Save as XAML, man.
XNA, File Save as XAML, and I have, you know, the dancing dog that does the animations, and all I need to do is have a timeline, move the thing around, and it just spits out XAML for me.
I'm going to add in Clippy. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you could imagine if this guy was in Clippy. That would be, like, the dog would be animated.
Looks like you're building a three-dimensional world.
I would definitely write more letters if this guy would talk me through the process.
So some pretty cool stuff and acquisition there.
Now, this week, you interviewed the man.
Yes.
I mean, is that freaking Bill Gates?
That is Bill Gates being interviewed by
Yeah, I realize I look like a giant there. I'm actually 8 feet tall, so that's... And I apparently look like Quentin Tarantino was the other comment I saw.
But what was that like? I mean, you were sitting a foot away from Bill. What did he smell like?
He smelled like victory.
Oh, dude, I would have guessed Old Spice.
No, that's Ray Ozzie.
Oh, yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
We're never having Ray on this show.
And we're fired.
Yeah.
Did you touch him?
Yeah, I shook his hand.
Oh, man, when you squeezed his hand, he made more money in that second than you're ever going to see in your life.
Unfortunately, yes, he did. Thanks for reminding me.
Have you washed?
Yeah, no, of course not. Are you kidding me?
Purell, don't even touch it.
Yeah, dude. Seriously, I am going to wear a bloody glove if I have to kill my wife or something. Oh, it's Valentine's Day. We haven't talked about that. but to transition, I mean, Bill was great. So this clip is Bill talking about whether he still writes code, if he's still looking at code.
All right, let's go to the clip.
I vote yes.
Well, it's been a long time since my code was a key part of shipping products. A lot of my work is about architecture, how we're going to bring things together, be ambitious about, say, taking the SQL model and using that more broadly, whether it's SharePoint or Exchange or even the local file system. You know, I believe in bringing that rich data model. I get to write a little bit of code to play around to see, okay, how hard is it to do things with script? What are we doing with the declarative programming? How quickly is this modeling approach going to come in? I don't know if I'll get more time on this. There's some applications that relate to health and education that I kind of like to play around and prototype myself. So after the middle of the year, maybe I'll get to be a little bit more hands-on than I've been with the full-time work.
Vindication. Bill Gates still codes. He's still the man.
Mm-hmm. I know. He's looking at code.
That's right. Donkey.net, baby.
Yeah, exactly. He's coming back. And the other cool part is him thinking about health and education apps. So who knows what he's going to do there.
Sure.
So some pretty cool stuff. And then the other part that came out as a random news story was Bill Gates quitting Facebook.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I lost a friend.
He was just being overwhelmed with friends requests, right? 8,000 per day.
That's like a scoble and a half every single day of requests.
That's a lot of friends.
That's a lot of friends.
How many friends do you have?
611.
Wow. I think I had like half that.
Yeah, and we're like this, my friends and I.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody right now, go send Scott a friend request.
Oh, no. And they're going to say, oh, we hooked up randomly in 84, and it was wonderful.
That's H-A-N. So go check your Facebook.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So what else are we talking about? Oh, use of words. This is another thing we always find pet peeves, but you're a so guy. And actually, you can hear in the video, Bill does a lot of the, so one of the things we want to do at Microsoft, and you're an actually.
I am actually.
And I actually find actually to mean like the inverse of what you mean, like, oh, I actually like the taste of burnt bacon.
And my brain literally exploded. It just literally went.
Oh,
I actually found that funny.
Really? I actually literally found it exciting.
Yeah, so.
Super exciting, really.
So people do this all the time, and you don't notice it.
It's called interstitials.
Yeah, find actually, and just reverse whatever the person says. No, I actually like you. It's just the situation. Or I actually just want to be friends.
So great interview, Dan. Go check that out on Channel 9.
Nice to done.
What else do we have? Another video from the Lang.net series. Here.
Yeah, so Charles Tor, another great interview. And in this case, he's doing Give Me a Build. No? Okay. So we don't have names. It's Wayne Kelly and I forget the Java
Lang.net, man.
You can Java guys.
Charles Nutter.
Charles Nutter. Yeah, so interesting part here is the guys are building on top of different virtual machines, JVM, Charles Nutter for Java, and a lot of people know Wayne Kelly for his work on building Ruby.net on top of the CLR. So, and here's a clip of Wayne talking about the challenges in building on top of the CLR.
Well, it's the inherent tension between a very dynamic language and a relatively static runtime system. .NET was, even though it was designed to support many different languages, they had very much in mind statically typed languages. So you have classes with a fixed set of methods, a fixed set of data members, whereas these whole class of dynamic languages, including Ruby, Perl, Python, they're much more dynamic. Even though they had the same constructs of classes and methods and objects, the relationship between those and their semantics are very much different, and different to the assumptions which were made when they designed the .NET intermediate language.
Very cool. Lang.NET. The Lang.NET conference is always amazing every year at Microsoft. We've got huge brains working on this stuff and bringing them in from all around. The stuff that's going on around dynamic languages is so amazing because, from my point of view, it brings a new sense of aesthetic. People are really concerned about beautiful code. And I don't think you see enough beautiful C-sharp code, but not enough people talking about beautiful code. Mm-hmm. And I think that dynamic languages are focused on like principles like dry, don't repeat yourself.
Of course.
And I'm really excited to see more people moving towards dynamic languages. And the DLR is a really great underlayment for that. Interestingly, Jim Huguenin, who works in the DLR team, originally, before he worked for Microsoft, was trying to prove that the CLR was a lousy platform for dynamic languages, and in fact found the opposite, and that's what got him excited about working on that. The fact that, Wayne Kelly's making an announcement over there on the Ruby.NET compiler discussion that he would rather people put their focus on Iron Ruby, because he was finding, basically, that they're having to re-implement all of the DLR. Mm-hmm. So why split the effort? If the goal is ultimately to get Rails on .NET, why split our attention?
Don't
so I think that was
yourself.
Very cool. Don't repeat yourself.
Exactly.
Very, very cool, dry decision by Dr. Wayne Kelly.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see some of the things in Ruby.NET and DLR stuff.
Yeah. And that story comes from Matthew Podwisaki.
And so this is another video. Jennifer Ritzinger interviewed Terrell Cox, who does UX for a number of our server products. She does it for, I think, System Center, Mom, or what became Mom. Or the name Mom actually changed, so it's no longer Mom. I didn't know that.
It's dead.
It's not dead.
So, but this is interesting because you don't typically think of UX investment around server products, right?
Yeah,
it's
so
important,
mom
though,
now,
dude. I mean, it's so important. Have you installed Server 2008?
No.
Dude, you know how they say that the Vista, the WoW is now?
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, but the WoW for me was the server products.
Wow.
I mean,
I didn't even mean to say that actually.
And then it happened. The WoW is spreading. 2008 server, the server manager is just leaps and bounds beyond what 2003 did.
So that's where you define what you want your server to be?
Right. You basically tell it what role you want it to be, and then the roles are pluggable. So like when virtualization ships 180 days after RTM of 2008, there'll be a virtualization role.
That's cool.
So if you have some role, like media streaming server or something that you as a third party want to integrate in, it all becomes part of that main server manager. So you can go and say, I want you to be a file server, a print server, and do media streaming. Click, click, click. Oh, and I want ASP.NET. Well, what parts of ASP.NET? I want authorization, da, 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 da.
Right.
You know, and it's all part of the IIS app server kind of infrastructure for managing all of this. And the user experience work that they did to get that just right, particularly for that role management, totally shows.
And, I mean, the functionality was there in 2003.
It was there, but
part.
It was buried.
Right.
It was buried under user experience and buttons and add remove
MMC
programs
consoles
and MMC consoles. So that is like your one-stop shopping center for managing your server. I love it.
Very cool. And I think the interesting part here is this is user experience and not just for some of our consumer products, but as you said, you have a wow experience on server products.
Well, I mean, it seems like a silly thing to say. I mean, and I had this experience actually a couple months before I came to Microsoft, but it's like you can have transparency and fun animations and stuff like that, but when you're trying to get work done and you're like, got to set up the server, you know, time to make the donuts, got to set up the server, you know, this is going to be a lousy day. And then it didn't become a lousy day at all, and I boom, 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 and it was done. I was like, all right, finally, someone's putting a little work into user experience on the server side. I was very happy.
Nice.
Awesome.
Cool. So check out that video on Channel 9. Another video coming out on Channel 9.
This one's great.
Yeah, this is by Min. This is a video called Yellow Harvest. or there's a trailer for a larger video that Min seems to be working on here called Yellow Harvest.
Yes.
What really is this?
So we don't actually know. He did some of the characters' introductions. So Ray Ozzie is Emperor Palpatine. So
Senator Palpatine.
Senator Palpatine.
Sorry, you need to get your Star Wars.
No, but he later becomes the Emperor. So,
yeah, he does. Because.
So, but I'll give you that in I guess this would be episode 4. He technically is Senator Palpatine. So this is a combination Star Wars, South Park, and Microsoft. And let's actually go through and explain what Yellow Harvest means.
See, so here I've lost cool points by having to correct you on Star Wars trivia, right? So Yellow Harvest, of course, is a takeoff on Blue Harvest, which, of course, we know what that means.
Of course.
Pause.
Right.
So Blue Harvest was the code name for a pretend movie that Lucas said he was shooting while actually shooting Jedi, because he wanted to basically hide the fact that this was happening. This was our ruse. This was the facade around the development of A Return of the Jedi.
So what was Blue Harvest really supposed to be?
It was supposed to be a horror movie. It was a nonsense B-movie that he was filming. So Yellow Harvest, I assume, is because Channel 9 is yellow?
I think so.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. And I think that Blue Harvest clip ended up becoming Jar Jar Binks. And that's actually... it was adopted later.
Yeah,
so.
That is a scary...
Well, of course, Family Guy has a movie out now called Blue Harvest, where
right.
all the Family Guy characters play out Star Wars.
Which is hilarious, by the way, if you haven't seen. It's a great clip.
So
awesome video, Min.
Yep.
Picks of the week!
Picks of the week!
High five! Oh. Nice!
Picks of the week.
All right, so my pick of the week, actually, this one hits really close to home because I've had problems with this time and time again, and I didn't know what the problem was. I thought I was doing something wrong. I thought I had something configured improperly.
Maybe it was a problem with you.
Yeah, it could have been, yeah. But it turns out I don't need therapy, which is great. Not for this, anyway.
A text editor.
I might need therapy after sitting next to you two guys for a week, but...
Nice!
So my pick of the week actually has to do with, have you tried double-clicking on a solution file in Visual Studio 2008, and it doesn't actually do anything? So you have a solution file, you're in Explorer, you double-click on it, mm-hmm. nothing seems to
just
happen.
Crickets.
Yeah, correct, sir.
Yep. And so you have to go into Visual Studio, you have to go file open, and so on and so forth. So I was actually looking at Andrew Arnott's blog this week, and he's in DevDiv. He actually found this problem and traced down the root cause of it. What actually happens when you double-click on a solution file is it launches a program called vslauncher.exe.
Mm-hmm.
And vslauncher looks at the first two lines of that file and tries to determine what version of Visual Studio you want to open it up with.
Oh, and then it decides which DevEnv to run.
Exactly.
Mm.
And so in this case, I had a bunch of solution files that were created using the beta versions of Visual Studio, and I didn't notice that when you open those up in the RTM version, it doesn't actually patch the solution files.
Hmm.
And so the fix there is actually you just go into Notepad, you open up the solution file, you go to the first two lines, and you change where it says Visual Studio codename Orcus over to Visual Studio 2008, save the file, double click, opens up in Visual Studio 2008. So that's my pick of the week because that's something that I've been pulling my hair out about, and I don't have much hair left. So
shows.
Thanks,
yeah. Ooh, burn. So somebody from the community ought to build a little text editor thing that uses desktop
cool.
search and just replaces the first line of SLN files.
Yeah.
Or Orcus. We could open them in Notepad.
Or, yeah, you could open each one in Notepad. That helps, too. Great.
But if they build it, we'll have them on Channel 9. Or we'll talk about it on the show.
Yeah, we will plug you.
Yep. So, Dan, your pick of the week?
So my pick of the week is a site called FelonSpy. And this was actually featured on Lifehacker. So this came up to us, and it's a site where you put in your address, and it actually shows felons that live in your neighborhood. Seems like a cool idea. You get to see who's doing aggravated assault, who's doing kidnapping in the third degree in your neighborhood. And it turns out my neighborhood was actually filled with criminals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, not just you, others. So what was interesting, though, was a specific user, Monkey Stick, which, you know.
I love the Monkey Stick.
Yeah,
Monkey Stick and I are just, we don't talk anymore.
Yeah, so Monkey Stick did a view source on FelonSpy and actually saw that it turns out they have bogus JavaScript that's literally creating random files. So let's check this out. So if you can see here, some really nice, well-commented, shady code that creates push pins, fake, a random number of push pins and randomly puts them onto a map and then randomly assigns names and crimes.
Different crime, each button push.
Yeah, yeah. So I think this is hilarious. One is a great shady coder out there for Felon Spy. Really happy that you commented your code. But it's always great to see when a geek comes out and says, actually, no, this is completely false. But if somebody finds a way to build Felon Spy and plug into these systems, I think it'd actually be a really big hit.
Well, these things actually exist. I mean, you can go on to different, depending on what municipality in the U.S. you live on. Like, I know that Detroit has and Chicago both have excellent overlays that are doing mashups. So your local municipality may have a mashup where they can overlay crimes on tops of maps.
Yeah, so the Chicago crime mashup was actually one of the things that we always use as an example for Popfly.
But, oh, yeah,
but
that's a great
it'd
one.
Be great if somebody did it nationwide.
Nationwide, yeah.
Anywhere
worldwide.
You go to. Yeah, exactly. So you can see who the criminals are that are even close to your workplace.
Right. So good work, Monkey Stick.
And don't put your address in Felon Spy. And love Monkey Stick.
Okay, and Scott, since you're a guest, we gave you a pick of the week.
Oh, here. Look at that. So cute.
Your first pick of the week.
That's going to become the new headshot that I'll be giving to conferences. That's fantastic. All right, well, mine is not quite so exciting as finding criminals on the internet, but...
What is really?
Yeah. But basically, I thought it was really cool that buried within Scott Gu's recent blog post about ASP.NET MVC, I think it was eighth down the list of features that are
Number
coming
eight.
Out in the next version of the Community Technology Preview, was the ability to source patch the MVC. And that means that if you find a bug, you have a problem, you get frustrated, people have really high expectations about these betas and these CTPs, you can fix those bugs. You can make a private build. Now, this isn't open source. This doesn't mean that you can necessarily give us those patches, mm-hmm. but it moves you forward. Because, you know, how often have you found a bug, you've used Reflector, maybe you've used the new Visual Studio source server feature. You can see the bug, but you can't fix it.
Right.
We want to be able to enable people to make those private builds. They're not redistributable, but they will fix your bug. It will fix your problems. They'll move you forward and get you working on the next feature.
So is this a technical implementation, or is it really just a licensing amendment?
It's
we
both.
Made here?
It's both. They give the actual source code,
right.
Which is awesome. So you now get the source code. You want to, like, even whether it's bug fixes or say you need to make a change to something really low level where something like extension methods wouldn't work, there isn't something where you could actually... do this. This gives you the ability to do those low-level feature changes. So, like, my company can have my version of MVC.
Right. And certainly, if you report those bugs, try to get those fixed. But the idea is, why waste time?
Sure.
I can see the bug. I can fix the bug.
Yeah.
And MVC, frankly, is a little bit more of an advanced technology. It's not necessarily something that everyone using web forms is going to rush over to do. It's one of those 20%. To ASP.NET Web Forms 80%. But for that developer who's using that, we want to enable them to move forward. So I think it's pretty sweet, and it's just it's the magic of the goo.
Yeah.
Scott Goo, he's the man.
Scott Goo.
Not just because he's your boss or anything.
Explicitly because he is my boss.
Right?
Oh, okay. So this is one of the things that I do love, that they're targeting both web forms and the advanced user in MVC.
Nice. Great pick. Not bad for your first one there.
Thank you, sir.
All right. So our last segment here.
It came from the internet.
It's a series of tubes.
Good old Ted Stevens. He'll be in the studio next week, actually.
So this week's It Came from the Internet actually comes from our friends over at Channel 10.
Yes.
And Tina actually, she wanted to really be transparent about what life at Microsoft actually is. So
yeah, yeah.
I keep saying actually. Thanks for pointing that out, Alex.
So let's...
I've got a clicker.
It's a serious dude.
So let's go to the clip.
Let's go to the clip.
Well, then there's the obvious thing that everybody who works at Microsoft is rich. And we are, but we don't go around flaunting it.
Hey, Scott, how was your weekend?
I'm rich!
Right on.
You can't read a blog without somebody saying, oh, Microsoft, they've got this big fear of competition. Well, let me tell you personally that Microsoft has no fear of competition. Here around the office, you can say anything about any product you want. You can use any product you want.
You guys, you want to grab some lunch?
Sure, sounds good.
Hey, why don't we go over to that Mexican place on 148th? What's the name of that place again?
I'll just Google it.
That's just a glimpse into what life really is at Microsoft. So go take a look at the rest of that clip. It was actually really good.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Congrats,
so, nice
Tina.
Job, Tina. So I wanted to just thank Scott for being on the show. Really
actually,
nice
you've been great.
Yeah.
So thank you. All right. Good deal.
So what? Whoa.
We're not.
And he pulls a. He
I think
pulls
he just
a.
Bill Gated us on the Daily Show here.
Dude, he just Bill Gated us. Bill Gates didn't even Bill Gates me.
No, but that's been another episode of this
yeah.
week on Channel 9.
Awkward.
So check back in next week.
Thanks.
To you about the Visual Basic with the DIM XML document and if also and if.
Jimmy Stewart will probably be coding F sharp. It's crazy. It's a functional language in the CLR. It's recursive. I did not know that. That is some wacky MSIL right there. I have never seen a stack dump go that deep. So I understand that you use Express.
Yes.
Yeah, correct, sir.
You want to do your...
Yes! Yes!
I'm doing something with the guy. Jamaican. I'm not want to be doing no G-Sharp. I'm not going to put that language in my code. I've got 3 jobs already, man. I've been doing the build job. I'm doing the continuous integration, the TDD, the BDD. I've been doing the DDD. That'd be like 13 things, man. I'm not want to be doing that. It's not cool, man. I'm going to go code Java, man. Eclipse, that be the way to go.
Oh, that's so class. I've got to eat it.
Today, comrades, as we sail into history, good to be using Microsoft products from now on. Is that... As a Scottish Russian submarine captain.
The Jeopardy reference too.
Oh yeah.
I don't know, Alex, but your mother's a
hey.
Nah, nah, nah. Gonna have a good time.
Hey.
Do you remember that?
What was that cheer called?
Fat Albert.
Fat Albert,
dude.
Yeah.
Nah, nah.
We're gonna do our thing. Nah, nah, nah. Gonna have a good time. And we have a theme song now.
Yeah, dude. That was the stuff, man.
That's hey, Kool Aid!
Break through our wall.
Yeah, dude. What else is good?
I got chunks of guys like you in my stool!
More cowbell! Dude, I got I've got a Wii now, which is like a $200 tennis simulator. And I've got Rock Band, which is like $160 Don't Fear the Reaper simulator.
You see, Visual Basic is like a horse, you see. You put some peanut butter in his mouth, it looks like he's talking. Okay? You see, you can't like... You can't...
That's just the crazy getting shit he would say, too.
You can't... You see... Can I finish? Can I talk? Can I say something, please? Can I say something? Can we cut him out of the sound there? Because we got multiple levels, correct? Okay. You see, Visual J Sharp, you're putting lipstick on a pig. You can't do it. You see, you can't light a porcupine on fire and expect to get licorice. You can't do it. Can't be done. Can I finish?